listening to Stumptown Trade Review. I'm Thor.
I'm Brian.
And today we are going to be reviewing The Eternal Smile by Jean Luen Yang and Derek Kirk Kim. And so this is a book that has three different stories in it. And it's, we think, illustrated by Derek Kirk Kim and written by Jean Luen Yang.
Yeah, it's a little hard to tell, but... And the reason it's so hard to tell is that these are three, like you said, three different stories. They're linked together just tangentially. And the art in them is so completely different that you could make an argument that three different artists did the art in this book. So,
and it's not just the art. It's like the layouts and everything is completely different.
Right.
In each story.
Exactly. So... Maybe we should start with just talking about each individual story.
Sure.
Because it's impossible to talk about this book as a whole.
Yeah.
Because the stories are so unique individually.
Sure. And the first one's called Duncan's Kingdom. And it's, you basically are thrown into a king in medieval times. And it's really just sort of a fantasy story.
Yeah, kind of a light sword and sorcery type.
Yeah, exactly.
More along the lines of, young adult stuff as opposed to like Conan the Barbarian or something.
It kind of reminded me of the Black Cauldron, if you've ever seen that animated film. Not as dark, not nearly as dark, but that's that same kind of a style.
Right, right. And so, yeah, Duncan is, set to marry someone in the story, and he keeps getting distracted by, of all things, basically a Coke bottle.
Yeah, and Snappy Cola.
Snappy Cola. And so that's our first indication that things aren't right, that this is something more than just a... your run-of-the-mill sword and sorcery type comic.
Yeah.
Because as a sword and sorcery comic, there really isn't a whole lot to it.
Yeah.
It's pretty much by the numbers, goes off on a quest, finds big monsters, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But where the Snappy Cola bottle starts to... show up, that's our real indication, and then it starts to trigger other things for him.
Yeah, it really, this world begins to unravel,
mm-hmm.
both metaphorically and
physically,
in that he has this kind of mentor, Brother Patchwork, who kind of tells him what to do or shows him what to do, and he confronts him near the end of the story and unravels his, he's bandaged up, and so you can't see
Brother Patchwork is,
and we come to find out, spoiler alert, that it's himself,
right?
And that he is basically in a coma, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so himself, he's been trying to keep himself, one side of himself has been trying to keep him in the coma because he's got a perfect fantasy land here,
right,
where he can be the king and marry this beautiful princess and, have all of his dreams fulfilled, but it's not real life. It's like that old philosophy question, if you had a machine to where you could just experience climbing Everest, is that better than really climbing Everest?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so this is really a discussion of that.
Right,
question.
Is it better to live in this fantasy world that isn't real, or go out in the real world where he's going to be dealing with real pain, physical and emotional pain in the real world, and so dealing with that, is it better to make the tough decisions and go forward sometimes?
Yeah.
And it's like I said, for your typical sword and sorcery book to all of a sudden take a turn like that, it's it becomes so much more than that.
Yeah.
And for me, this was probably I don't know, the easiest of the stories and the least difficult to follow in the sense.
Definitely. It just presented itself as a light story that I could go along with. I mean, it wasn't incredibly deep or anything, but it was well put together and I was enjoying myself in the story, and you could see little hints of something different, so it kept you intrigued. Some of the other stories didn't quite have that same nuanced approach.
Right. Well, and this one, I felt like, for me, this was the weakest of the three stories because it really was telegraphing early on that this isn't quite what it seems.
Well, I think there's really a flow to this book through these three stories, in that the first one, you're kind of telegraphed what's going to happen. The second one, you have no idea what's going to happen. Right. You're completely blindsided. And the third one, you know what's going on right from the very beginning.
Except, right.
But you know what I mean. Like, you know exactly what's going on. Mm-hmm. You just don't know how the characters basically feel about it. Or,
and see, that's what I was feeling, is that even though this was probably the weakest of the stories, and the general philosophy is, you know, put your strongest arguments first and last and bury your weakest one in the middle, I felt like this worked because putting it at the beginning, it meant that later on, when we're, you know, kind of in the mood for twists and turns, this one, you see it coming, and it wouldn't have been nearly as enjoyable if we'd already had a few more under our belts.
Yeah.
This was kind of that introductory level that, you know, let's get used to the format, let's get used to the idea thing. Oh, you enjoyed that? Okay, now try this.
Yeah.
And so, and by saying it's the weakest of the three is kind of like saying that was my least favorite flavor of ice cream. I mean, I enjoyed all three of them. I enjoyed this one a lot. Just, I felt like of the three stories, this one was...
All three were really spectacular stories when you read them all the way through.
When you read them all the way through, because which brings us to the second story.
This was a real curveball. You get through that first story, and there's depth to it and everything. So I guess I should have been expecting something more. But really, this is a Scrooge McDuck ripoff through about three-fourths of it.
Yeah, I got to the end of the first story, like I said, having enjoyed myself, turned the page, you know, there's a mock cover for Grandpa Greenbucks, and all of a sudden, you know, you're reading along, and it's not even that I didn't even really feel like it was a riff on Uncle Scrooge or, you know, Scrooge McDuck. I felt like they were just trying to tell a Scrooge McDuck story without copyright issues.
That's exactly what it felt like.
And it was annoying, and I had...
And it didn't feel... I don't know. Exactly like what you said. Yeah. It didn't feel like they were trying to do anything but just tell a Scrooge McDuck story. And it felt so jarring and out of place in this book.
And the art was so jarring compared to the first story's art. The first story's art... It's pretty straightforward stuff.
Yeah.
I was actually a reprint of something that was published in the late 90s by
Image. Like I said, like kind of like that Black Cauldron feel to the art as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, so it's realistic-ish. I mean, characters have the appropriate proportions and such.
Yeah.
So you go to, this Scrooge McDuck riff where... You know, except it's all done in frogs, and it's, you know, super cartoony and slapstick humor and bad puns, and I felt like it had the bait and switch pulled here.
Totally.
And then
you get another bait and switch.
You get another bit where all of a sudden, you like with the first one where you got the snappy cola, this time you get a smile appearing in the sky, and the story goes in a whole new direction. But then that's not even the story. That's not even the twist. It's kind of the, oh, you thought this was it. No, I got
It's really
else.
A meta conversation about a creator and the createe. Mm-hmm. And really they meet and start to talk, and it's really about one becoming disgusted with the other and following its nature, really.
Right. And, you know, the idea is that this Grandpa Greenbucks is never happy. He never has enough money. And what he's always searching for is a pool of gold that's so deep that he can dive into it and not touch the bottom.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's one of those things where he finds his pool of gold, but it's not at all what he expected. It's not at all what we, the reader, expect. So it's an incredibly satisfying ending to this story while being something completely different. And it really, again, it works on the comic book level. And like you said, it works on this discussion about, you know, creators and their creations. It works on the idea, on the level of what's really important in our life.
Yeah.
Which, when we started out with this story about it being a really lame ripoff of Scrooge McDuck.
And it was incredibly shallow.
Yeah.
To begin with.
This, I mean, you couldn't have told me that it was going to end this way.
No,
I would
definitely
never
not.
Have believed you. Just because I could not see how they could have gotten from point A to point B,
yeah,
in any manner. And the fact that it was done in a relatively short number of pages. I think this is probably one of the longer stories in the book.
Yeah.
But, you know, comparatively speaking, you know, it's a relatively short number of pages.
I think it's actually the shortest story.
Oh, really? Oh, look at that. Yeah. For those of you playing along at home, Thor is currently measuring with his scientific finger method here the relative width of all of these. But it's, you know, I think that story for me, you know, you and I talk about the turnaround that we felt with Young Liars, where, you know, the first one we were kind of like, who knows? And then the second one we were both on board.
I was even further. I was like, I don't even want to read this, you know, ever again.
This Grandpa Greenbucks was, I was the same way. It's like, oh, God.
I was this close to closing the book and not opening it again. Like, this close.
Yeah.
A smidgen.
Yeah, it was really, but, I mean, for me, it's probably the most satisfying story, to tell you the truth.
For me, I like the third story the best out of,
mm-hmm.
out of the three different ones. And I like the art better. And the layout's better, and just the story better. For me, the third one was the best out of all of these.
You know, the third one, I think, had the most pressure on it. Because, like I said, the first one really kind of telegraphed it and let you know what was happening and let you get used to it. The second one pulled the double fake out on it.
Yeah.
And the third one, you go into it going, okay, I know what's happening.
Yeah.
I understand how this works. So where is the twist going to happen? It's got so much pressure on it. It's hard not to crumble. And it doesn't. And that's what's so amazing.
And really, the way that it goes, that it overcomes that, is that there's really no twist in it. I mean, there's a slight twist. But I didn't really think that it was that much of a twist.
I think that, for me, the twist was that the character, the main character, did probably the most illogical thing twice. It centers around the deposed Ugandan king email scam that, you know, I'm sure everybody's inbox has been filled with.
Sure.
We need to get the money out of Uganda or whatever, and if you can please send us this, or if you can please give us access to your account, we'll do this, that, or the other. And the main character,
Janet
does. Which is probably, you know, where I said the first unexpected thing happens.
Well, previous to that, we see her going in, and it's time for her review, and she's in a review with her boss, and she doesn't get a promotion, and she really is run over in this review of her performance. And you get the feeling that she's a good, hard worker, but is kind of meek. And so the boss, who's this aggressive alpha male, just kind of runs roughshod right over her and is just like, oh, well, we'll think about that, you know, giving you a raise and a promotion or whatever, and I'll get back to you, whatever. Right. And just brushes her off. And then we see her getting the email from the Ugandan prince or whatever it is. Yeah. Whatever it is. It's obviously a scam. We all know that it's a scam, except for some grannies in the Midwest maybe don't.
Yeah.
But she gives him money, and then the rest of the story, for the most part, is emails back and forth between her Ugandan prince and herself, where he needs more money for different problems that are carrying forward. And there's always the promise that she's going to be the Ugandan queen and whatever else.
Right. And so, like I said, I mean, the twist comes in the fact that she actually does it. I mean, yeah, you get the impression that she's not an idiot. I mean, there's nothing in her character that makes her come across as not being intelligent. So you know somewhere deep down inside she's doing this for a reason. And I think that's what works so well in this story is that we never know what she's really thinking.
Uh-huh.
And so why does she continue to do this? Why does she continue to give him money? Well, I mean, why did she give him money in the first place? But why did she continue to give him money? And then, I mean, once it becomes clear to everybody involved, you know, including the Ugandan prince, that she knows that he's not a Ugandan prince, why is it then that she continues to make the choices she makes? I mean, it's really, she's a fascinating character.
Yeah.
And what makes her so fascinating is that we just don't quite get exactly what makes her tick.
Yeah. And so it kind of peaks, or it's getting, building up to it.
Right.
In that she sets up an appointment. He says he's going to be in town in a week or something like that. And she says, well, I know this great Ethiopian restaurant. Let's meet there. And so, of course, she shows up there and he doesn't show up.
Right.
And where the somewhat of the twist comes is when she starts crying and immediately walks to a dormitory.
And knocks on a door.
And it's her Ugandan prince.
Right.
Only it's the scam artist.
Right.
And she's known all along that it's a scam artist.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, that's the brilliance of it. I mean, that it's, I mean, clearly there are people who pull this all the time. There was a fantastic, I think it was This American Life, where he talks to a group of people who are scamming the Ugandan scam artists. Yeah. So, I mean, clearly this is all real, and there are all, you know, kinds of get-rich-quick schemes out there that end up hurting people. But I think that's where this is that, you know, no one's really harmful in this story. There's no one out there other than the boss who's out there to really be a jerk. I mean, even this Ugandan prince, you know, he's got a real purpose behind this scam that he's running.
Yeah.
You know, and again, I think that Janet's got a real purpose behind what she's doing. It's kind of what
she's really,
people,
she's buying a fantasy,
right,
essentially. I think that's the way she sees it, is that she's buying this fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a great turn in the artwork as well. It's in kind of muted blues and purples the whole time. And when she's sitting there talking to him, and she makes him put on like ethnic Ethiopian clothes, and all of a sudden it turns to color and she's in her fantasy land, you know, in Ethiopia, riding on elephants and in front of a throng of adoring subjects, you know.
Right. You know, I think that,
and it's all in color as well.
You know, I think that thematically it all ties in so well, because it gets to that question that really all three of these ask, is to what extent will you go to make your dreams come true?
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the first story, Duncan's dealing with all kinds of physical and emotional pain, and so he shuts himself, like you said, in this coma and keeps himself there. In the second one, in Grandpa Greenbox, you know, what will he do to get that pool of gold that he can't ever touch bottom in?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and in our last story, Urgent Request, you know, it's what's the cost of this fantasy for her to live this fantasy life, if only for a night at a Howard Johnson, you know, restaurant.
It should be noted, I forgot to mention this, but while she's having this conversation with the scam artist, she starts dressing a little snappier and having a better attitude around the office.
Mm-hmm.
And so the story really ends with her working up the courage to go to her boss's office and demand that promotion. And really, it's changed her.
Right.
And the fantasy has somewhat come true, not in the way that she imagined, maybe, but it really changed her life and her perception of life.
Exactly. And that's the thing, is that, you know, again, it's an unexpected result and an unexpected consequence of this, because you expect that someone who gets taken, I mean, all of her money is gone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, someone who gets taken that far in one of these scams, you expect the story to be a tragedy. And I can't think of a more positive ending for Janet than what happened.
Oh, definitely, yeah. I mean, her life has completely turned around, and it's in a better way. She now has confidence in herself, and she's ready to move forward on her life and not let anybody walk all over her.
Right. You know, this last story, the Urgent Request, I really felt like that would make a really great animated short.
Yeah.
I thought that the artwork really lent itself well to it.
It was really laid out like that as well.
Yeah, it kind of got that feeling of, I don't know, all of the panels gave a real feeling of motion.
Yeah.
That the characters were always in motion. Even when they're sitting at, you know, even when she's sitting at her desk, there's a feeling of all this motion going on around her. Like, she's isolated from what's going on all around her in the world. And I don't know why, I was reading it, and I just really got this feeling like, you know, this would be a great short, you know, like Chris Ware does a lot of short animated stuff. This would be a fantastic short animated project.
Yeah.
And, you know, all the coloring that went along with it, it's got that, you know, kind of gray tone watercolor type backgrounds going for it. Almost like the old, what do you call it, old Peanut Snoopy cartoons, just in that the background is just a wash of colors and tones. It seems to work so well for her. This was, you know, completely unexpected, and I mean, really, the whole package, you know, it was difficult to stick with at times, especially that second story. But this is the kind of book that, you know, you get it and you work your way through it, and the payoff is there, not once, but three times.
Yeah.
And it's fantastic each time. Like I said, even the weakest of the stories, even then, it's a great story.
Yeah.
And a great twist and a great piece. And, you know, it makes me want to go and find other works by these, you know, artists. American-born Chinese has gotten such fantastic press over the years. It hasn't made it onto my reading stack. But after reading, you know, The Eternal Smile, it makes me want to go out and find more. And it makes me want to go and share this with other people.
Definitely, yeah.
I think I'm going to take this copy. I mean, unless you're, you know, dying to hold on to it. I think I'm going to take this copy and go put it in the school library.
No, I think that's a great idea. And this is definitely appropriate for children.
This is definitely, I mean, I would probably say, you know, middle school on up, not because there's anything in it remotely inappropriate,
mm-hmm.
But just the...
Thematically, it's more mature.
Right, and they won't be able to follow the twists and turns mm-hmm. that come along with it. you know, the first one that seems so obvious and so, you know, straightforward to you and I being adults, I think that one would probably be the most difficult for kids to deal with, because so much of the, you know, sort of shattered world that he is, you know, slowly exposing himself to, so much of that is done wordlessly.
Yeah.
And kids who are just learning to deal with a graphic novel format need the words and the pictures to tell the story. And so to not have that, I think it would be difficult for younger kids. But, you know, there's some great stuff in there, like you said, for all ages.
Yeah.
So, you know, and once again, another first, second book that, you know, is a home run. I mean, Gus and His Gang and Ball Peen Hammer.
I mean, Ball Peen Hammer was first, second?
Yeah, Ball Peen Hammer was first, second.
Wow. Yeah, that's three great books from first, second.
Yeah.
That we've reviewed.
Yeah, it's really hard to argue with the just consistent quality. You know, and the physical product itself is fantastic. It's in that, you know, soft cover format, but it's got the, you know, the kind of flaps on it so that you can mark your place in the book. The paper quality is fantastic. The printing production is wonderful. And, you know, the book deals, you know, one of the things I wanted to talk about this book is that not only is the storytelling unique for each one, not only is the art unique for each one, but the coloring is unique for each story as well. And the unique coloring requirements for each story translate so well in this printing process that they've used, so that, you know,
they also use different paper. I mean, you can see that this is a yellow paper for the third story, whereas the first two are on a standard thick white paper.
Right.
So, I mean, they really took the time to make sure that even the paper was correct for each story.
Right. You know, and so again, this is just a really quality product that, you know, would be fantastic on any bookshelf. And, you know, again, this is one of those books that you hand to somebody who thinks that comic books are just, you know, guys in their underwear punching each other. I mean, this is this is a whole different type of book and different type of storytelling.
Definitely.
And then at, you know, $16.95, that's a pretty solid deal. I mean, this was an enjoyable reading experience, and you know, hard to argue with.
Yeah. I think some of the deals that First Second has had, Ball Peen Hammer was a steal at the price that it was.
Right.
Gus and His Gang was a great deal. I'll definitely pick up any First Second book that I see out there that catches my eye.
Yeah.
I have no qualms with the quality of the books.
Right. Well, you know, we're lucky enough that we got their catalog for the upcoming year, for at least the spring and early summer of the year. And I gotta tell you, there looks to be some fantastic books coming out from First Second. I mean, you look at the Olympian series coming out from George O'Connor, whose work on Ball Peen Hammer we enjoyed so much. You know, there's just some really great stuff coming from First Second. And yeah, I agree that it's one that we really need to just keep looking out for.
Yeah, I agree. You have been listening to Stumptown Trade Review, your online resource for independent trades and graphic novels. You can find us at stumptowntradereview.com.